Welcome to the service of the First Unitarian Universalist Society of New Haven, which has been a home for liberal religion since 1836. You see up there across that sort of mantle a number of symbols. This indicates that we are open to world traditions, and we like to take them in as we can and digest them and make our way. So this will be this is our annual Earth Day service. Earth Day is not for a few days. It's a service of primarily poetry and music, honoring the earth and our relationship with the earth. So as we light the chalice, we have some opening words from Native American poet John Trudell. Crazy horse, we hear what you say. One earth, one mother. One does not sell the earth the people walk upon. We are the land. How do we sell our mother? How do we sell the stars? How do we sell the air? First section here is when our relationship with the earth goes wrong, and there's a poem by Robinson Jeffers, which will be read by Terry.
Yeah, I have misplaced my reading glasses, so bear with me. I'm wearing them. They're hard to find them. Slowly, the passenger pigeons increased. Then suddenly, their numbers became enormous. They would flatten 10 miles of forest when they flew down to roost, and the cloud of their rising eclipsed the dawns. They became too many. They're all dead. Not one remains. And the American bison, their hordes would hide a prairie from horizon to horizon. Great heads and storm cloud shoulders, a torrent of life. How many are left? For a time, for a few years, their bones turn the dark prairies white. You, death, you watch for these things. They are your feasts. But turn your great rolling eyes away from humanity. Those grossly craving black eyes. It is true, we increase. A man from Britain landing in Gaul when Rome had fallen, he journeyed 14 days inland through that beautiful, rich land. The orchards and rivers and the looted villas, he reported that he saw no living man. But now we fill up the gaps. In spite of wars, famines, and pestilences, we are quite suddenly 3 billion people. Our bones, ours too, would make wide prairies white, a beautiful snow of unburied bones, bones that have twitched and quivered in the nights of love, bones that have been shaken with laughter and hung slack in sorrow, coward bones. Worn out with trembling, strong bones broken on the rack, bones broken in battle, broad bones gnarled with hard labor, and little bones of sweet young children, and the white empty skulls, little carved ivory wine jugs that used to contain passion and thought and insane delirium, where now not even worms live. Respect humanity, death, those shameless black eyes of yours. It is not necessary to take all at once. Besides that, you cannot do it. We are too powerful. We are men, not pigeons. You may take the old, the useless, and helpless. The cancer bit and the tender young. But the human race still has history to make. For look, look now at our achievements. We have bridled the cloud leaper lightning, a lion whipped by a man to carry our messages and work our will. We have snatched the live thunderbolt out of God's hands. Ha! That was little in last year. For now we have taken the primal powers, creation and annihilation. We make new elements, such as God never saw. We can explode atoms and annul the fragments. Nothing left but pure energy. We shall use it in peace and war. Very clever, he answered in his thin, piping voice, cruel and a eunuch. Roll those idiot black eyes of yours on the field, beasts, not on intelligent men. We are not in your order. You watched the dinosaurs grow into horror. They had been little elves in the ditches and presently became enormous, with leaping flanks and tearing teeth, plated with armor. Nothing could stand against them, nothing but you, death, and they died. You watched the saber-toothed tigers develop those huge fangs, unnecessary as our sciences, and presently they died. You have their bones in the oil pits and layer rock. You will not have ours. With pain and wonder and labor, we have bought intelligence. We have minds like the tusks of those forgotten tigers, hypertrophied and terrible. We've counted the stars and half understood them. We have watched the further galaxies. We have watched the further galaxies fleeing away from us. Wild herds of panic horses, or a trick of distance, deceive the prism. We outfly falcons and eagles and meteors. Faster than sound, higher than the nourishing air, we have enormous privilege. We do not fear you. We have invented the jet plane and the death bomb and the cross of Christ. Oh, he said, surely you'll live forever. Grinning like a skull, covering his mouth with his hand. What could exterminate you?
So since March 11th, I think it was, when the earthquake happened, I've been aware of the things happening in Japan and followed them somewhat. It got me thinking about nuclear power, of course. So there are approximately 440 nuclear power plants in the world. Another 65 are under construction, although it's true that a few of these projects have been stopped because of the Fukushima accident, possibly only temporarily, we don't know. Very often you stop drilling for a while, for example, and then all of a sudden you're drilling again, it's not a problem. In any case, this is a lot of plants. And so as I was following this, I was sort of familiar with nuclear power and how it worked. But one thing I'd never really registered is the fact that there are, I knew there were cooling pools and there was a problem with storage of the spent fuel. What I hadn't realized is that you have to have circulation of water in all these pools. In other words, if you just fill them with water, they'll just boil it away and you'll have dry rods, which can catch on fire. And then you have a terrible emission of radioactivity. So that means you have to have pumps. And as we know in Fukushima, the pumps didn't work because the standby generators were flooded. And that's really what has led to all the problems. Now, there may have been other things like cracks in the pipe systems and stuff that we really don't know. In any case, the spent fuel pools require a source of electricity to run those pumps in the event there's some kind of grid failure. And in the first place, the plant shuts down, so you can't use power from the plant itself. And then if the grid also goes down because of some type of general catastrophe, as happened in Japan, then you have to have standby. And of course, you have to have diesel fuel. We have over 100 plants here in the United States. I believe I read that at the Vermont Yankee plant alone, there are 650 tons of spent fuel rods. So this is a substantial problem. And we know there's the Millstone plant is not too far east of us. Indian Neck is the other direction, maybe 50 miles. So there's a possibility of radioactive release. The spent fuel rods have to be cooled for about 20 years before they get into a safe range where they can then be transferred to dry cask storage. A dry cask is a large steel container, probably stainless steel because it's supposed to last, you know, 20,000 years. So you don't want something that's going to rust away. Probably like 2 to 3 inches thick. The rods are held, are spaced apart from each other with an inert gas. And then the casks would be buried. And they are relatively safe compared to a pool. They don't require any exterior source of power. However, we're talking about 20 years of running the pumps. The same is true of a cold shutdown. Once you shut down a reactor, the reactors in Fukushima all shut down. They had an automatic mechanism, and the other rods come in that are not radiative. You know what kind of metal they are?
Graphite.
What they call control rods. And so that worked. That part worked on their automatic system, but the problem started when they didn't have the ability to cool them with water. And so you need, again, if you're going to have a cold shutdown, safe shutdown, you need, I haven't actually read 20 years, but I'm assuming it would be about the same as for the spent fuel. So 20 years of reliable electricity, in other words. And even a few hours without electricity can lead to problems. So once they're sufficiently cool, they can be stored for a long time. But even after several thousand years, a broken cask would result in significant releases of radioactivity. So the question that comes to mind is, in light of the fact that Japan, one of the most modern countries in the world, the most advanced, has had this disaster happen and they don't seem to be able to really get it under control fully. So what are the chances that people in the future will be able to meet these conditions of safe operation and shutdown? Eventually, they have to be retired. They have to be shut down. So as long as the whole system works all right and there's enough power, theoretically, you can shut them down one by one. And then where you're going to put the rods has not been decided. The question is, will the world of humans in the future be stable enough to handle this type of dangerous technology? How stable is our world today? How far are we from a time when oil will no longer be in adequate supply to support our type of society? Some people think we've already reached a production peak. We're on a plateau and we're going to really start going down. Others think, no, it'll be farther away, maybe 2020, 2030, 2050. And of those who deny that we are anywhere near the peak of oil production at the present time, there are very few who deny that a peak will eventually occur. So when you think of the timescales we're talking about here, whether it's next year or in 100 years, we still have a major problem with these plants. We have to do something about them. So we need really to have a stable and reliable source of electricity for potentially thousands of years if we just keep operating and building more plants and so on. Unless there is a huge sea change in public opinion and we proceed now with a crash program to bring all the reactors to a state of cold shutdown and safe dry storage. How likely is this to happen? So imagine quite a number of Fukushimas or Fukushima-like events over the next 50 years. There's a good possibility that general background radiation over the whole planet would increase. At the present time, there's plutonium over much of the planet in very small amounts. It all came from bomb tests and other human activity because it's a man-made element. It's extremely dangerous material. So there could be a cancer epidemic. And cancer risk, I probably knew this before, but some people emphasized it. Cancer risk is directly proportional to exposure, and exposure is cumulative. So if you get a little dose here, a little dose there, a little dose there, eventually you may reach a level where some type of cancer would develop. Well, now imagine a worldwide economic collapse. Imagine a time when many countries would simply be unable to provide reliable electricity over a 20-year period. You know, there's many countries in the world now where they have rolling blackouts. Like in Pakistan, they probably have standby generators, and there's not really a likelihood of something happening. But if you had a generalized, collapse of the world economy, where would we be in terms of being able to provide this 20 years of electricity? Imagine a time when the immediate survival needs of people are overwhelming, Will it be possible to divert resources from those needs, those crying and immediate needs of people, to make sure that the shutdown process proceeds correctly, because otherwise in the future there will be a really horrible problem that we won't be able to deal with? And what about the industrial base necessary to make those huge stainless steel casks with walls several inches thick? Imagine a number of reactors being abandoned because anyone who comes near them will die of radiation poisoning within a few hours or even minutes. And some people think they're approaching this in Japan right now, where they are going to eventually be unable to do anything about them. They won't be able to entomb them because anybody that gets near them will be dropping off like flies. I mean, maybe they figure out some way to do it. In any case, once they're abandoned, they can continue to spew this radioactivity into the atmosphere for many years. So we already noticed that people are getting cancer much earlier in life than was true half a century ago. Imagine a time when the death of children from cancer will become commonplace, normal even. In other words, not that you get it during childhood, but that you get it and then you die from it while you're still a child. Imagine the lifespan of adults decreasing gradually, so you're getting back more to a medieval-type lifespan. While this is a terrible scenario to even think about, however, if you don't think a serious worldwide collapse is likely anytime soon, ask yourself this. Can you imagine there will be no such collapse for the next 1,000 years? You believe that history gives us any warrant for thinking that our present type of society will continue without a missing a beat in terms of being able to carry out these high-level technical processes for the next 1,000 years? So I'm not answering it. I'm just letting you think about the question. So how likely is that we would not have anything like this for 1,000 years? So one might well ask at this point, well, can we really do anything about this anyway? Isn't it a big part of our difficulty as humans that we regard ourselves, that is the human species, which we tend to consider as a single actor? We say, well, we could shut this down, or we could build more plant. We, right? Well, who's this we? Anyway, so we imagine it as though we, the human race, are a single actor. We are going to decide something. And we have this somewhat illusory idea that we are in charge or in control. But we know that we might become very protective of the earth. We might come to feel very protective of the earth in the way that children are protective of their mother, because we might come to a new awareness of how much we need her, how utterly dependent we are on her multidimensional meshworks of living beings. It's not so much about guilt as it is about realizing that we have made a terrible mistake. We have undermined the basis of our continued tenancy on the planet. We have corrupted our own habitat. An error, then. And yet, one must also admit, it has been a horrible religious error. Because we have located the sacred source of life not in the earth, the self-renewing earth, but in our own all-too-effective cleverness. I think this resonates with the poem that Terry read. So to renounce control, or the illusion of control, is no doubt the part of wisdom. And no doubt all religions will teach us, give up ego and recognize that you're not as great in the scheme of things as you might have thought. And then to acknowledge our fundamental dependency. But it seems to me that we face a wrenching contradiction because of these power plants. Because of their large numbers and the potential for major damage if a lot of them went berserk. And that is that we have set something in motion like the Sorcerer's Apprentice, and if we don't do anything about it, like if we all go back to living locally and we'll all go back to village life and we'll grow our vegetables and we'll have cows and all this, but nobody's going to be in a position to act on the scale that you would need with these plants, then they are inevitably going to start one by one going off. So that means that we would have to, once again, one last time, assert a massive degree of control in order to bring under control the Sorcerer's Apprentice that our former foolish seizure of control has set in motion. It's a quandary. It is really very disturbing to think about, because it just seems impossible that the whole human race would actually come to a consensus about something like this, which doesn't really seem immediate. You know, well, we had one disaster, but that, you know, the last one was 35 years ago, and we had 35 years of thinking about other things. So we can resume that now. In any case, this is formidable. It is still technically possible to do, but a profound resolve would be required. My contention is that a new religious order is needed. I'm thinking of Roman Catholic orders. This will be an opportunity for that important minority of people who long to serve something greater than themselves and the economy. Erik Erikson said that the great virtue of adolescence is loyalty. There are people who never outgrow this. These are the ones who are often stigmatized by their contemporaries as being too idealistic. Such people might come in handy in relation to the difficulty under consideration, which is the impossible dream of actually shutting down these extremely dangerous and accident-prone installations before they contaminate the whole planet irreparably. People who just can't leave well enough alone in the comforting knowledge that it's really not their problem. That is the future of the Earth. That would be grandiose, right? To think that was your problem. There are people who for some reason feel that indeed the future of the Earth is their problem. May their tribe increase before it's too late. The balance of the service is under the heading of Return to the Earth. And first, a Bob will read a poem.
So this poem is called Words of Affirmation by Frederick Servine, May 3rd, 2004. Mm-hmm. I believe that women are an active force. I believe that the human body is an active force. I believe that matter is an active force. I believe that the earth is an active force and an immense ensemble of active forces. I believe that the earth is the source of life. Evolution is not godless atheism. It is another religion. The earth is the mother of all life of which we know. There may be life elsewhere, but this is the life we know and with which we have real relations. That we are here now alive in the flesh is the greatest miracle. The beauty and terror of this life are more than we can comprehend. There is no other life. For us, there is no other life. Let us be loyal, therefore, to this life which is in us, to this human body, this flesh which is our flesh, and to this earth which has given us everything. We know that we belong here and that we are her flesh. We are part of her. There may be life elsewhere, but this life here alone is worthy of our love and deep commitment.
Now I've asked a number of people to participate in reading a poem of Walt Whitman called This Compost. Does everyone have their copy that was going to do this, or does anyone need a copy? Okay, well, I have some extra copies if somebody didn't have theirs along. I'll just find it here. Let's see. This one. Oh.
Okay. Something startles me where I thought I was safest. I withdraw from the still woods I loved. I will not go now on the pastures to walk. I will not strip the clothes from my body to meet my lover, the sea. I will not touch my flesh to the earth as to other flesh to renew me.
Oh, how can it be that the ground itself does not sicken? How can you be alive, you growths of spring? How can you furnish health, you bloods of herbs, roots, orchards, grain? Are they not continually putting distempered corpses beneath you? Is not every continent worked over and over with your sore dead?
Where have you disposed of their carcasses, those drunkards and gluttons of so many generations? Where have you drawn off all the foul liquid and meat? I do not see any of it upon you today, or perhaps I am deceived. I will run a furrow with my plow. I will press my spade to the sod and turn it up underneath. I am sure I shall expose some of the foul meat.
Behold this compost. Behold it well. Perhaps every mite has once formed part of a sick person. Yet, behold, the grass of the spring covers the prairies. The bean bursts noiselessly through the mold in the garden. The delicate spear of the onion pierces upward. The apple buds cluster together on the apple branches. The resurrection of the wheat appears with pale visage out of its graves. The tinge awakes over the willow tree and the mulberry tree.
The he-birds carol mornings and evenings while the she-birds sit on their nests. The young of poultry break through the hatched eggs. The newborn of animals appear. The calf is dropped from the cow, the colt from the mare. Out of its little hill faithfully rise the potatoes, dark green leaves. Out of the hill rises the yellow maize stalk. The lilacs bloom in the dooryards. The summer growth is innocent and disdainful above all those strata of sour dead.
What chemistry, that the winds are really not infectious, that this is no cheat, this transparent greenwash of the sea which is so amorous after me, that it is safe to allow it to lift my naked body all over with its tongues, that it will not endanger me with fevers that have deposited themselves in it, that all is clean forever and forever.
That the cool drink from the well tastes so good, that the blackberries are so flavorous and juicy, that the fruits of the apple orchard and the orange orchard, that melons, grapes, peaches, plums, will none of them poison me, that when I recline on the grass I do not catch any disease, that probably every spear of grass rises out of what was once a catching disease.
Now I am terrified at the earth. It is that calm and patient. It grows such sweet things out of such corruptions. It turns harmless and stainless on its axis with such endless succession of diseased corpses. It distills such exquisite winds out of such infused fetor. It renews with such unwitting looks its prodigal, annual, sumptuous crops. It gives such divine materials to men and accepts such leavings from them at last.
We give our collection away, our loose collection, and this quarter it is going to the New Haven Downtown Soup Kitchen. I'm going to do what Bob does, stand up for you. Fantasia for the 4th of July. It is time. Say independence, then. Say liberty. It is time for the rats in the sewers to strike for freedom. Time for the cancer cells wild with desire to proliferate inside the comatose body. Time for the dancers to invent new dances to a music of unknown provenance. Time for the drifters to drift, picking up new lovers as they go. Time for molecules to vibrate more intensely. Time for the earth herself to quake in jubilation, shaking off the old lessons of the masters like a cow shaking off flies. It is time for Africa now. Time for the African rhythms, so long familiar to our ears, to penetrate all the way in. Time for infectious madness to possess us completely. Time for our own black desires to come out of the closet. The desire to open all the windows and all the doors. The desire to bathe naked in the surging sea. The desire to become trees. The desire to kiss the earth. The desire to eat dirt. The desire to eat insects. The desire to couple with animals. The desire to know even as we also are known. The desire to take to the open road, exploring without limit the question, what does desire want? Do you think you know the answer? Only the dancers know. Dare to know then. Let the feet declare their independence, running as they will, dancing as they will, the slow dance of new lovers who touch the earth with tears, and on to the frenzy dance of full communion. Declare liberty throughout the land unto all the inhabitants thereof. Let the drummers be free to drum, the potters to pot, the dreamers to dream, the talkers to talk, the singers to sing, the thinkers to think. Let the wings be free to beat at last, the roots to plunge, the bacteria to swarm. They already are. The teeth to crunch, the intestines to digest, the genitals to swish, the brains to glow, the uteruses to contract. Let the reins go slack. Let the horse run for the sheer joy of it. Let the energies of life declare their independence. Let every cell express its intelligence. Let every fiber of existence have a mind of its own. Let viroid life invade the media of domination. Let love's excess fabricate the new communities. Let the outcast and forgotten climb up onto the soapbox. Trust the earth. Every heart vibrates to that iron string. Open the gates of the dungeon. Blow trumpets. Ring bells. Beat drums. She it is, queen under the hill. She comes forth dancing and rattling her castanets like an army terrible with banners. It is the earth now declares her independence with wild laughter in her eyes. Dare to embrace her. Dare drink from her foaming cup. Stay with us now, Mama. Otherwise, how will we ever make it in this world that worships money?